can you make a career in sports medicine? Because I think it's an important and a relevant one.
Yes.
Specifically with these young people listening here. So the answer I'm going to give is that increasingly the answer is yes.
Welcome to the SASMA podcast, your source for the latest insights in sports medicine. Designed for healthcare professionals, we cover everything from injury prevention to athlete performance and mental health, helping you stay informed and excel in your field. Let's dive in.
Hello and welcome to another SASMA podcast, where we explore the evolving world of sports and exercise medicine. I'm your host, Asha, and in today's episode, we're diving deep into navigating a career in sports medicine in South Africa, a field that's growing rapidly, but can often feel complex to enter. We're joined by two incredible guests who have immense experience in the field of sports and exercise medicine, and who bring different perspectives to this conversation. Firstly, we have Dr. Lavasan Pillay, a respected clinician and academic known for his extensive work in sports medicine. And alongside him, we're honored to have Dr. Patukukle Dzondi, a leader in sports governance, policy development, and healthcare strategy, with vast experience at the intersection of medicine, leadership, and advocacy. Dr. Pillay and Dr. Dzondi, welcome to the podcast. Thank you both. You both have numerous accolades. It's quite an honor to have you both with me today. Let's start with your journey into sports medicine. Was there a defining moment or experience that drew you towards the field?
From my side, what I can say is that I started off very much in an orthopedic space. My venture was to become an orthopedic surgeon. I traversed to become a trauma surgeon. And what was defining for me was one day of working on a Saturday evening where we had multi-trauma patients, and me as the senior registrar was unable to manage it by myself because I had lots of juniors around me. We had lots of polytraumas that needed acute care. I had to form my 65-year-old consultant at that time and say, please, prof, I need you to come and help me to stabilize. We've got five pelvises that we need to stabilize. And for me, that is where I realized that I don't want to be that 65-year-old that gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning at some point in my life. Let me find a space for me that I enjoy, because I was involved in sports medicine already and I enjoyed that space. Let me go to this route that gives me better relaxed perspective on life instead of being on call 24/7 for him.
And then what led you to pursue sort of an academic trajectory in sports medicine?
So I must take things to my HOD at the moment now, Prof. Krista. My first involvement in this entire thing became when I was put onto the role of being a chief medical officer and chief doping control officer within the 2009 Confederations Cup, which was the prequel towards the World Cup in South Africa. And my anti-doping information and experience, etc., it pushed me in that group. And that's where I started my involvement into the academic sessions of things, of teaching people and explaining to people about the doping-related issues in sports and trying to actually evolve that issue with our developing sports people. That was probably my first to get involved in the academic setting. And over the years, obviously, it's evolved. It's evolved to such a state that I'm now a full-time lecturer of trying to ensure that I can contribute positively towards development of the sports discipline, which is so much needed in our country.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, so mine was maybe just briefly my journey in sports medicine. It was really a combination of personal passion and professional curiosity, I'd say. I mean, I loved sport growing up, like most of us who are in the field. And I was quite an active athlete myself. So, you know, I experienced firsthand how sport can shape your confidence, your sense of identity, and your community. And then I suppose in terms of academics and professionally, I've always been fascinated by the human body. I loved biology, you know, and fascinated by how it works, adapts, breaks down and recovers. So when I discovered that there's this discipline or this master's at the time called sports medicine, for me, it was a real light bulb moment because it just brought together everything that I cared about. And so sports medicine then felt like a natural and obvious path to follow. And then maybe just in terms of academia, again, I would say that this was probably just a natural extension of my curiosity and actually my desire to build capacity in the field. I mean, I love asking questions. I love connecting dots. I often say my superpower is that I can connect people. And I like finding ways to turn like evidence into practical and pragmatic solutions. And so I think my actual clinical journey started at the University of Pretoria, and I started as a junior lecturer very soon after I qualified as a sports medicine physician. So I've always been surrounded by academia, and I find it quite inspiring and invigorating and energizing. But I do realize that if we want sports medicine to grow in South Africa, and especially in an under-resourced area, then we need to train more people, build capacity, generate local research, and just build systems that will outlast any one individual. And so similar to Dr. Pillay has just said, for me, the academic path is just really about nurturing the next generation. It's about creating knowledge that's relevant to our context. That's very important to me. And it's making sure that we're not just consuming global evidence, but we're actually contributing to it as Africans.
Yeah, that's very true. And sports medicine, as you said, is diverse globally. But in South Africa, it presents some unique challenges and opportunities. From both of your clinical and academic perspective, how would you describe the current landscape of sports medicine in South Africa? And is it possible to sustain a full-time career in sports medicine in South Africa?
Well, let me start, and then I'll leave the second part to you, Dr. Pillay. I'll say, you know, what sets South Africa apart is we're quite unique in that we've got pockets of world-class sports alongside communities that have got very limited resources. So you have to be incredibly adaptable and collaborative. And as you say, there's a lot of diversity in talent and culture and challenges. So anywhere you go in South Africa, it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all approach. What I also think sets us apart as individuals and stakeholders is our resilience and creativity. So we often have to find very innovative ways to deliver high-quality care in less than ideal settings. And we've seen that we do. You know, once you go into these global platforms, and Dr. Pillay has got an equal amount of experience in these global platforms, you actually realize that we stand shoulder to shoulder amongst all these global giants in terms of the quality of clinical care that we deliver, despite the resource constraints. In terms of our rigor, in terms of our research and academic publications, we don't have the quantities, we definitely don't, but in terms of the quality of research and the quality of academics and the quality of clinical expertise, we are right up there and sometimes leading. And we also lead in terms of our contribution to policy. So I just want to take this chance to say we must never undermine ourselves as South Africans and certainly Africans. But there's also a huge opportunity to build a sport and exercise medicine framework that's really our own. And again, that's grounded in local research and local realities. And I guess the opportunity is that SEM in Africa in general is relatively new. I mean, I'm saying sort of 20, 30 years new. And so we've got great opportunities to just shape and grow the impact in our continent.
Yes, thank you for that. And Dr. Pillay, what is your take on this?
I totally agree with Dr. Zondi's sort of response towards your question. And I think the most important thing, if you look at what we've done thus far, it's massive. I delivered an ethics talk in sports medicine and doping control, and we got a massive response and massive communication about this aspect of things, which tells us that there are practitioners that actually require all this necessary information sharing and training in this regard. Apart from that, we are still having connections with people within the African continent, because I think it's sub-Saharan Africa where people see us as the global leaders within the sports medicine space. We should actually help to advance everyone else within our African continent, because we have so much information with our local leaders that have become global leaders to be able to bring this entire process together and try and share our experiences and make sure that we share it in an evidence-based method, evidence-based manner, and also making sure that people are actually aware of this is where the information comes from. So I think let's move away from trying to think that we are globally squashed up and we are more globally evolved. And we can evolve that process more as we get the newer, younger generation of researchers, investigators, and physicians involved in the space to create a greater space for our continent.
Yes, that's true. And, you know, hopefully we can open more doors and continue to make sports medicine in South Africa just take it to the next level. Many of our listeners are medical students, junior doctors, or allied professionals wondering how to enter this field. Dr. Play, could you walk us through the academic pathway, clinical training, and clinical training options available for aspiring sports medicine practitioners in South Africa?
Okay, because you got such a short timeline involved, I'll go through the short space. Because I can go through a long space or a short space. So if you have a keen interest on things, important for practitioners that want to get involved in a space, start getting yourself involved within things like community sports, school sports, all these aspects of things, of trying to give healthcare perspectives and care. Those things become strong in your CV when you're applying to do your next level master's related application or master's in philosophy application, depending which university you're going to, because there's several universities in the country that supply the qualification of sports and exercise medicine. Apart from that, we are moving towards a very different group nowadays, which is in its involvement as well. And this is showing people that we are an actual specialized complex where we developing an MBA program. Every university in the country is in this process at the moment. It's a long process. It goes through various departmental approvals, etc., gazetted approvals and SAQA approvals, which is not for anyone else's concern. But those things will come to effect at some point in time. But if you are keen on getting involved in this industry, get involved on the ground. And make sure when you get involved on the ground, you have the necessary qualifications. We have so many webinars, talks, etc., to try and evolve people and give you evidence-based ways of managing patients. And I think people need to understand that it's not one of those industries that is just random. It's an industry that is very specific in certain scenarios, and you have to have certain sort of expertise if you work in the space. What I can tell people is make sure you access the free resources that are allocated by industries like SARU, World Rugby, Concussion South Africa, etc. Access these resources to advance your knowledge base.
All right, thank you for that. And Dr. Zondi, for those who may wish to move into leadership, policy, or advocacy roles in sports, what skills and experiences are critical? How can younger professionals start building this profile?
Dr. Archer, can I first start by answering a question that we both ignored? Well, we didn't ignore it, missed it, around how you make a career in sports medicine, because I think it's an important and a relevant one,
yes,
specifically for these young people listening here. So the answer I'm going to give is that increasingly the answer is yes. We have evolved quite a significant and a fair amount over the years, over the, let's just say, 30 odd years that we've had sport and exercise medicine in South Africa. And initially, those opportunities to have sport and exercise medicine as a full-time profession were basically limited to people who are working in the academic environment or who were employed by teams. But even then, teams didn't employ doctors on a full-time basis. What we see now is a larger amount of teams recognizing the importance of sports science and sports medicine, integrating sports sciences and medical practitioners into their full-time teams, and of course also the general population being more conscious in a way of exercise and lifestyle interventions for health. And so there are actually a few individuals who are able to sustain themselves with a clinical practice that focuses primarily on clinical sport and exercise medicine, and then obviously in the academic space and in the team space. And we expect that this is going to grow as sport and exercise medicine becomes integrated into many health streams. So in other words, as Kilei was explaining, that the registrar program is developing and it's entering into the public healthcare space. So I think it's promising, but I do also think to say it's a journey for many people. And so if you are going to take this journey, you can't just assume that as soon as you finish with your MBA or your MSc or M4, whatever you're going to do, that you'll land a full-time job in sport and exercise medicine. You often have to craft it yourself.
Yeah, no, thank you for answering that, because it's, I think, you know, the climate of medicine in South Africa has changed over the past few years.
Yes.
And I think junior doctors have been struggling now to even find, you know, mm-hmm. working opportunities. So it's important that we sort of, you know, look at the trajectory in medicine and whether the specialist dreams can equate to the reality for a lot of junior doctors.
Absolutely. And I think it's important because a lot of people, all of us, you know, when you start the journey, you're sort of not sure how to build your career. And so I think Dr. Billy mentioned it quite a few times, find mentors in the space and just know that in some cases, unless you land, like I said, in a full-time team job or within a practice that does sports exercise medicine or in the academic space, you'll have to put it together yourself and you may have to navigate that journey and make a journey to yourself. But if we speak about leadership and policy, and if you're looking to go into that direction, then you have got my attention. I would say to anyone who is interested into leaning into these skills that first you need to be willing to zoom out, to look at the bigger picture. You need to be willing to understand or learn how systems and governance shape what happens on the ground. Communication is really important in these kind of roles because you need to be able to explain medical concepts and ideologies in a way that resonates with a broad number of stakeholders, so athletes, coaches, administrators, and even policymakers. Another thing I'd say is that relationships and trusts are everything at any level, actually, within a sporting setting and just a leadership level. Honestly, relationships are what make collaboration work. And so it's important that you work on your relationships, you work on your network, and just understand that trust is built over time, right? So you must be patient with this. Don't look at a Dr. Pillay or Professor Christiansa van Rensburg or Prof. Martin Schwellness and think, I've got the same qualifications as they do, you know, I've got a PhD maybe even, so why aren't I given the opportunities? Because you get some opportunities through relationships, that's just the reality of life, and through trust, more importantly. And then maybe lastly, I was going to say, echoing again Dr. Pillay's words, just for young professionals, I think it starts by just showing up, getting involved, volunteer, join working groups, contribute where you can, and just keep building your clinical credibility and exposure, because it's the real world experience that will keep you relevant and credible and it'll anchor your advocacy.
Thank you. And sports medicine is also really a solo field. And I think Dr. Zondi, you alluded to this earlier, but from a governance standpoint, how do policies and systems promote or even hinder effective collaboration across disciplines in sport?
Oh, this is so important. I mean, when policy is clear, when it's fair and when it's evidence-based or informed by evidence, it really can bring people together and it can create a culture of trust and accountability.
Dr. Pillay, can you speak to the importance of a multidisciplinary collaboration in your practice, your clinical work, and in your academic work?
I think what they normally call this multidisciplinary perspective on clinical work and practice, etc., is an important aspect. But it's not actually realized as important within the actual clinical space. Normally, we see this happening very often within the research space, where we have a doctor, physio, biokineticist, etc., publishing a paper. Clinical space is always difficult to actually sort of involve everyone into the entire mix, and it's important to understand that everyone needs to be on the same page. If your doctor is subnormal, qualified and experienced as your physiotherapist, as your sports scientist, as your exercise physiologist, as your biokineticist, you're going to have bumping in the heads all the time when it comes to conversations, when it comes to managing athletes. And what is the entire intention of being involved in these spaces? It's all about managing athletes' healthcare for performance in a safe way. So discussions need to happen about these scenarios of making sure that if a biokineticist or a sports scientist finds a problem with someone, to ensure they communicate these issues that are medical concerns with the doctor to investigate accordingly. And sometimes you have these glitches in communication, which should never really happen if you have a good communication channel. There's lots of channels in sports-related settings where these are well-founded scenarios where there's a system in place. But sometimes, especially as the level goes lower, these systems become lost, where someone will recognize an issue and only 4 weeks later advise the doctor of a cardiac-related symptom. And I think communication becomes important. And we have technology nowadays. That's why we have WhatsApp groups. So I've done that with a lot of the teams that I've worked with, where we create WhatsApp groups, where as soon as one of my bios or physios find an issue, they WhatsApp me, give me all the clinical symptoms that they found to actually guide the patient further. Because we're looking about patient care. At the end of the day, we are healthcare practitioners. And we have to practice the providence of, which is always look after the health of people further. And I think that's the most important thing when it comes to all these aspects, when it comes to a multidisciplinary approach. And ensure that the people you get involved are actually that much qualified. Because sometimes you may have practitioners that actually aren't qualified, especially within the fitness space and the performance space. And I think as a medical doctor, as a physiotherapist, anyone that's registered within the Health Professionals Council, it's within our reason to ensure that people we get involved are registered towards whatever council accordingly and have the necessary expertise to perform their duties towards your patients. And I mean, that's collaboration becomes quite important in that perspective as well. The baseline of it all is all about communication. Emails, WhatsApps, SMSs, phone calls works fantastic.
All right, thanks for that. Looking back on your journeys, what advice would you offer to young professionals considering entering a career in sports medicine? Dr. Zondi, your advice for those aspiring leadership, governance, or advocacy in the field?
Firstly, I am so excited. I can't wait to meet you. I can't wait for your contribution. But in terms of advice, I'd say be open to learning. Young people, individuals must just say yes to opportunities that stretch you, even if they don't feel glamorous at first. You must be curious. You must be interested in learning how organizations work. You must find mentors and also peers who are going to challenge you to grow, but who are also going to keep you honest and keep your feet on the ground. Then I'd also say it's important to stay close to the work on the ground. So your credibility as a leader really does come from understanding the people that you're trying to serve. And I think the last thing that I would say to you is just remember that change takes time. I always say it takes a long time to steer a ship or change the direction of a ship. And policy and advocacy can be slow, but the impact is really, really worth it. So you've got to balance passion with patience.
Yes, no, thank you. And Dr. Pillay, what is your sentiment for those entering the clinical and academic route?
Listen, I can echo exactly what Dr. Patwa said down. She's actually done it eloquently. Probably better than what I would actually try to do it. But I think that's quite important of trying to bring together your clinical and academic space. When it comes to academics, not all clinicians are academics, and people need to actually realize it. Not everyone can actually realize that they can do research in a further perspective, but if they come to the right people to have discussions with and try and guide them in that space and teach them in that space, that's where your academic route would lie. So no idea is a bad idea. The only bad idea is the one that has never been shared. It's simple as that. So rather share your ideas, because we work in a space where we all wanting to share ideas and we wanting to advance and progress this space within our sub-Saharan space that we work in within. And people often think of us as being non-academic or non-performance, etc., from an academic side. Well, if I can use a word that my mother's a teacher. My mother always told me never to use this word. People always think we're stupid. We're not stupid. We're clever people. And I think if all of us that have reached a point to move towards a direction of becoming specialized in a certain direction, it already creates this perspective that we are cleverer than the next person and we can create ideas and perspectives on that issue. And imagination is your only sort of blockage. And we have to sit down and think about these issues when you present your presentations towards people that you may be involved in doing whatever considering publication you want to do. Your university professors, your HODs, etc. And do it in a very strong way and giving evidence-based. As Dr. Pato has said previously, we practice evidence-based medicine. That's what sports medicine is all about. We practice evidence-based medicine, and to support evidence-based medicine is probably the best way to actually move in this direction as well. And it will probably advance someone's career in different perspectives.
Yes, no, thank you for that. Also, you know, you highlighted a very important aspect there, and I think we often forget that medicine, not just sports medicine, is a teamwork approach, and it's about collaborative learning and, as you rightfully said, evidence-based learning, and always to remember that we as clinicians are not our own entities, but we essentially function as a team. And then finally, where do you see sports medicine heading in South Africa in the next 5 to 10 years? What do you think the climate of sports medicine will be?
To give it a start, I would love to see sports medicine more deeply integrated in our public health system, because there's so much overlap between exercise, lifestyle, and non-communicable diseases. And of course, it's heading there now with all of the universities developing MMed and registrar programs. We will hopefully see more training pathways and posts for young clinicians. I'm definitely invested in seeing more African research that is locally relevant. And I hope we will also see a bigger emphasis on the areas that haven't had enough attention, though it's growing. So areas like women's health, like mental health, and even athlete safeguarding. And then maybe lastly, I'm optimistic, really, really optimistic. You know, when I have these conversations and listen to people talking and just hear the fantastic work people are doing, I really am optimistic that with the right people and with the right policies, we will build systems that can support athletes at every level of performance. That, for me, is what I'd like to see in the future.
Yes, and I agree. Dr. Play, where do you see sports medicine in the future?
Well, listen, I have to... let me try and trump what Dr. Park, which is always difficult to do, but I agree with their perspective of trying to push the narrative forward. I mean, Dr. Pato is pushing something within UKZN with regards to the public health sector and bringing in sports medicine. I'm doing very much the same within the Northern Gauteng sectors within University of Pretoria as well, which tells you that we must remember that when you do this for sports medicine, it's sports and exercise medicine. And the exercise component is something that we've probably put in the background for a long time unnecessarily. I've pushed lots of narratives with regards to exercise within the oncology space in the last 2 years as well. And I've created lots of sort of intensity and sensitivity towards that space. More importantly, I've created more interest in that space. It doesn't matter who gets gained from that space, as long as at the end of the day, the patient has the end game of what we're trying to achieve is to promote that sports and exercise medicine is an important aspect of people's lifestyles. We like the middle generation of physicians. We would like generations like yourself, Asha, and people that are following in your generation to build on what we're trying to achieve. That'll be the end game, to make sure that you build on what we're trying to achieve in order to promote exercise as a adjunct or component of management of not only non-communicable diseases, but also making sure that it is properly managed within sports-related environments.
Wow, thank you. Thank you both for such rich insights as well as your time today. This conversation highlights just how broad and exciting a career in sports medicine can be, from a clinical practice to academic mentorship, and from athlete healthcare to national policy. And to our listeners, whether you're a student, clinician, or simply curious about this field, I hope this episode offered valuable direction. Thank you for listening. Until next time.